and it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, Arts and Entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. And once again, conversation with Al Petrelli, music director for and one of the guitarists with Trans-Siberian Orchestra. They've just begun their 2024 winter tour, landing at the Honda Center in Anaheim this year, not the usual spot in Ontario. This year, they're bringing out The Lost Christmas Eve, which was the third installment of their originally intended Christmas trilogy, which began with Christmas Eve and Other Stories and The Christmas Attic. They haven't touched The Lost Christmas Eve in about a dozen years, but this album contains pieces which have been played over the years, just not in the context of the album. The piece behind us now isn't one of those pieces, but it's never a surprise and always a joy to hear this one. And it's a fitting way to go into the program, in that last week, in addition to talking about and hearing pieces from The Lost Christmas Eve, Al and I started the program talking more about jazz, but we worked our way to the reimagined takes on the well-known classical pieces, as we expect from Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Another classical nod, for lack of a better way of saying it, is Wish List. That's L-I-S-Z-T. If they never delved deeper, this is a reimagining of Franz Liszt's The Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2. This is the one that I was speaking about earlier, thinking of. When I listened to this one, I was too busy trying to find actual quotes from Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2. And then eventually I stopped, Al, because I feel like this one is not so much quoting items, but rather it's played more in the spirit of...
In the style of, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I think the opening piano piece is a direct quote.
Okay.
That kind of bouncy bit in the front of it. One of the things about Liszt, and I've only heard this from some of the people in the band who actually attended Juilliard and were students of his, or studied his music, I should say, his hands were so enormous he could reach things that, like, mere mortals couldn't.
Yeah,
so that opening bit is, I'm not going to say impossible to do, because obviously it's been done, but I remember when we were first looking at that song, a lot of the piano players were like, huh? You know, I have no physical comprehension of how I'm going to pull this off. And then they adapted it to what they could physically do. But, you know, if his fingers were a quarter of an inch or half an inch longer than the rest of us, that's why he was able to play those intervals like that and fluently. So I think it's in the spirit of more than not, but certainly there are a few quotes in that that are really difficult.
One of the more obvious and recognizable ones that we get, thankfully, on, I hope, every tour from here on out, the Christmas Canon, or some variation of it, Pachelbel's Canon. Now, the notable thing, this one is interesting because while it sounds like there's a children's choir present, and maybe there was on the CD, I'd like to know about that, but when we see it live, there's not a children's choir.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear about how this is accomplished, because it goes beyond just having a soprano in the chorus.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, recording these records, Paul would say this to me time and time again. Let's make the best record possible and worry about playing it live later.
Okay.
Fine. Fair enough. And he heard, in context of his story, he wanted a children's choir. I think we also did something, I'm not going to remember the title off the top of my head, but on the first record we had a children's choir come in.
Yes.
And there was another song on the first record called The Prince of Peace that was sang by a woman named Marlena, and she was one of the stars on Cats.
Okay.
And then, again, Pachelbel's Canon being sung by a children's choir. So I'm going to kind of bounce back from decade to decade for a moment, but when we first started touring in 99, Paul said, what do you think about bringing a bunch of kids on the road to do this? I'm like, I'm not coming. It's not going to happen. You know, I want, dude, that's like herding cats. And you're going to have their parents with them. It's just like not happening. So, and the same with the Prince of Peace song, where Marlena was the longest running star on Cats. And, you know, obviously she couldn't do the tour. So it's like, well, how do you adapt a piece of music from the record and bring it live? And I remember in the case of Prince of Peace, it was, I was sitting at the piano and Darryl Pettiford was singing with us at the time. Amazing, amazing soul blues voice.
Yes.
And I remember kind of going through the chords of Prince of Peace, but in the style of Ray Charles, kind of adding all my reharms and my sub fives and my two fives and all that. And he started singing like how Marvin Gaye or Ray Charles would have sung the song. And Paul goes, well, problem solved. That's how we're doing this song. So when it comes to live, there's certain things that just are not going to happen. And a children's choir would be one of the big ones, you know. And you adapt it, figure out, okay, how can we bring this live? And now I'm sure Paul turned around and said, well, you know, instead of a children's choir, let's have three or four of the gals do the counterpoint, have the choir join at the end. So we're creating this counterpoint in this round and the excitement. Different than the record, but absolutely doable live.
Gotcha.
And a little more powerful live, I think, too. I think the subtleties and the nuance of a children's choir and very soft, I don't know if it would speak as well. I'm not sure. I've never done it. I remember we did it with a children's choir once on one of the Dick Clark shows years ago, about 20 years ago. And it was obviously in a controlled environment on TV, and it worked beautifully. But live in an arena, I don't know. And then what do you do with the kids the rest of the show? You know,
yeah.
Mischief and mayhem everywhere.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
No, thank you.
Are any of the instruments processed or running through some sort of processor during this portion of it to add to that synthesized feeling that we get? Because it's not just strict vocals.
No, it's all the orchestration part. No, there is absolutely nothing being processed.
Nice.
That's a bunch of people playing. You know, and every so often you'll hear just somebody's intonation is a little off, and you know, and they kind of freak out. I'm like, don't freak out, dude. That's live rock and roll. I'm okay with this. You know, if it's perfect, it's not music to me. I don't need perfection. I need you just to play and be passionate. And if you're a little ahead of the beat, I'll pull you back. If you're a little sharp, I'll let you know. But don't stress over it. Just play the parts and have fun.
Beautiful. One other side note, and this I would imagine would matter very little to many people. I read that this, known as Pachelbel's Canon in D, that this is performed in A. Is that because it's a little bit more dramatic? Why A?
I can't speak on behalf of the children's choir recording this, but I can speak on behalf of when we do it live, okay? The key is contingent on the singer's ability.
Oh, okay.
Okay, you follow me? Yeah. And the other thing is there's a fantastic interview with Joe Pass, and I'm a huge Joe Pass fan, where he said no matter what you do, don't play a song in the same key as the previous song. Pass said if he's doing whatever song he's doing and then the next song, don't do it in the same key because you're going to end up hypnotizing the audience because they don't know that it's in the same key. They just know that something about this is being repetitive.
Okay.
You know? And then with us, like a lot of the times people say, like going back to the most, you know, sometimes is a high C. And, you know, if one of the gals can't hit the high C, instead of worrying about what is she right or not, well, let's drop it to concert B flat. Let's drop it to concert A.
Sure.
Find their register and make the song work for them.
Nice, okay.
And of course, singers being singers and string players, oh, horn players being horn players, they're always playing in these bizarre keys that are really not guitar player friendly, like A flat major. You're like, oh, God, kill me. Baby, put your belt on because I'm talking to my friend and I don't want the seatbelt thing to go bing, 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 bing. This is my true joy in life, is every day to grab her.
That makes that 3 months of intensity really worthwhile to get that extra time back home.
Oh, my God, yeah, you're not kidding. And again, you know, being a little bit older and knowing that we're going to have conversations about the band all year long, and then I'm going to go to Omaha. I'll miss my family greatly, but every day that I'm home, if I have the opportunity, I'm going to take her to the bus and pick her up from the bus.
That's beautiful. That's
right, Munchkin? Right, that's my girl. Okay, I'm sorry. Well,
that's cool. No, that's all good. It's some people would see that as a chore, and for folks like yourself and others that I've spoken to, this is an absolute biggest bonus that a person can get.
Just a blessing, you know. I'm very fortunate, again, to say, you know, I'm turning 62, and I do what I do for a living. I love what I do for a living, and I love my family, and my family loves what I do for a living. So, you know, so far, all good, dude.
Yeah, beautiful. Again.
Standing all alone, I bled for you. I wanted to each drop my own. Slowly they depart, but fall in vain like desert rain. reason.
Okay, we've been talking about some of the classical-inspired pieces, or orchestrally-inspired pieces, let's say. Now one that, in some place, I saw it as a sequel to a Sabotage song, and that's simply Back to a Reason, and it's on The Lost Christmas Eve, Back to a Reason, Part 2. And so it's the same song for much of the way through. I even had the two of them playing back-to-back and bouncing back and forth between the lyrics and all that. And it only changes later in the tune. So,
exactly.
I mean, you know, so much of TSO, it sprung directly from Sabotage. So I'm wondering about adapting this one for a new person, a new character, because it's still the same moving experience and need, let's say, behind the experience.
No, 100%. And, you know, again, Paul is such a great songwriter and a great storyteller. And he's done such an incredibly large volume of work over the years, you know. And that Back to a Reason, you know, on a Sabotage record meant something very important to him in context of that record. Now, Sabotage obviously didn't reach the acclaim that it deserved in America. But the songs, why should this song go the way of the Dodo Bird, even though it's like the Box Tops, The Letter.
Yeah,
you know,
oh, yeah.
Came and went until Joe Cocker covered it, you know.
Oh, yeah. My favorite
version. Or any other song that we could talk about in that regard. So that song, accidentally, magically, intentionally, not sure, found a place in Paul's story, you know. And when, you know, it's like having one of your kids, you know, and you're like, wow, that was a really good kid. Whatever happened? Come on, let's go back, you know. I mean, I'm sure he had a much more methodical scientific approach to it. From the outside looking in, it's like, where'd this song come from? He's like, oh, it was on such and such Sabotage record. Dude, great song. He's like, yeah, and it fits perfectly into the story. You know, Paul had the story. He had the characters. He had the circumstance. He had everything going on. Now it was our task to create an underscoring or a soundtrack for that story. Sometimes he'd ask me, like the song Christmas Nights in Blue, right?
Yeah, oh,
The Lost Christmas Eve. Here I am, I'm sitting, you know, I probably have one too many McCallans, and I'm sitting behind the piano, and I happen to be listening to Dr. John and Leon Russell and working on my piano chops, and I just remember, like, starting to play that riff for no apparent reason, and real dirty and real bluesy, and, you know, and Paul went, what's that? I'm like, no idea, dude. He goes, I love it. He goes, that's the song in our barroom scene. I'm like, huh? What barroom scene? You know, keep me in the loop here, brother. And, you know, he told me that portion of the story, and I kept playing. It became like this Cab Calloway-esque narrative, a very pivotal portion of the story. So you never know what he was going to either pull from his past or from his pre-existing catalog, or some random riff that I would come up with, or John Oliva would come up with, or whomever, that fit into what he needed. And instead, we never knew what direction it was going to go in musically. You know, and that's what made it fascinating and fun. There was a lot of things. Listen, a lot of times. Listen, Paul and I spent half our lives together.
Yeah.
You know, he'd have a guitar in his lap. I'd have a guitar in my lap. I'd be sitting behind the piano. He'd, you know, I'd grab a random banjo or a mandolin or whatever, and something would spark an idea with him.
Got to get back to reason. Got to get back to reason. And this late in the seasons, one by one, distractions fade from view. The only reason I have left is you.
You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Al Petrelli, music director for and one of the guitarists with Trans-Siberian Orchestra. They'll be at the Honda Center in Anaheim this year, touring The Lost Christmas Eve, one they haven't performed live in quite some time. Now, a lot of what we think of with Trans-Siberian Orchestra is gloriously loud orchestral metal mixed with Christmas tunes, but there's a lot of acoustic numbers as well. Take Christmas Jazz, for example. ¶¶ Christmas jazz, a cool, cool acoustic rendition of Good King Wenceslas. So is this you on the album or When We See It Live, by chance?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's
right. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Paul, again, going back to the Miles Davis quote of surround yourself with talented people and find out what they're going to come up with. So, again, and not calling myself talented or not talented in any way, but I'm very well-versed in many different styles of music.
Yes.
And part of my education was a deep study of Joe Pass and Kenny Burrell and players like that, where they were able to take melodies of songs and assign each melody note a specific chord or a non-specific chord and create these chord melodies or these piano-style adaptations on the guitar, what I call piano-style guitar playing. And I love doing that. On all the records, there's a bunch of acoustic pieces, you know, adaptations of different Christmas carols that I would just kind of like scratch my head and say, well, how would I do this? Or, you know, how would Joe Pass do this? Or, you know, what Joe Pass wouldn't do. Don't make it too smart. Just, you know, keep the melody, keep the changes, you know, outside you can get without breaking the mold, you know? And Paul wanted a version of Good King Wenceslas. And I remember just opening up with that ostinato over that E major 9 chord. And I said, you know, I got a buddy of mine, this bass player, I think would really, really bring this to life. And his name was T.M. Stevens. And T.M. used to play bass for Miles Davis. And then he became Joe Cocker's MD and Tina Turner's MD for a long time.
Wow.
You know, fantastic, fantastic R&B bass player in the school about, you know, Jameson and all that. And I remember him sitting in the studio with T, and Paul was in the control room. And I was showing T the changes. And I would just go through this really kind of snappy bounce. And going through the chords, and I think I took the first melody, and TM was a fantastic supporting bass player. And then I said, dude, you take the melody the second time, and let me comp underneath you. I'll see what we can come up with.
Nice.
And, you know, within a matter of hours, we had what I considered a really great arrangement. And Paul's like, that's like if jazz was played on Christmas Eve, that's what it would sound like. And I'm like, all right, cool. Again, you know, I'm just playing this major 9 thing and this really like weird kind of trippy Lydian ostinato at the end of it, and TM was soloing over, and it was just like, this wouldn't exist if Paul didn't say, come up with something weird, with it different, you know? And again, it didn't matter what style it would be. You know, it didn't matter if it was a lot of notes, or it was a few notes, if it was a complex chord, or if it was a brute type power chord. He knew in that big brain of his what was going to fit into this big puzzle of his that was the story. And that's what made my job so much fun all the time. I never knew what he was going to throw at me next.
Truly incredible.
It really is. You know, it is a lot of fun. Everything's fine. So, not, again, if you go back and listen to any, I hate using the phrase concept records, or, you know, any stories. You know, and again, going back to my first awareness of South Pacific or West Side Story or Rodgers and Hammerstein, Sound of Music, whatever it would be. You know, Andrew Lloyd Webber with Jesus Christ Superstar.
Poets
and
Madmen.
Every character had their own soundtrack to them, and it never repeated itself. Like you said, why is that in the key of A? Nothing repeats. Because if you give everybody the same thing over and over again, it can get a little banal. It can get a little redundant, you know. But I like that variation. I love that about the Beatles. I love that about Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Stones. I mean, it's like, what are they doing now? This is, you know, first time I heard Carlos Santana. Really?
No, it's a great comparison there. Another song-specific question on Siberian Sleigh Ride. There's a stylistically, let's say, jazz approach for the first several measures, but then we get the heavy rock distortion coming in. And I guess what I think of with TSO, so many guitarists in the lineup, is this actually two people or one guy, you or whomever else, doing these sliding jazz chords and then hitting the pedal for the distortion, the dissonance thing?
Yeah, that was me.
Okay, one person through and through.
Yeah, that was me. We kind of had, you know, especially coming up with the arrangements and the recordings of, we kept it, you know, all the guitar players have performed on the records, you know. But I'm kind of a little protective of the rhythm guitar stuff, you know, and the melody stuff. And, you know, and Paul was a little protective of it as well. We developed a real trusting brotherhood that I was going to deliver his melodies the way he wanted them. And the chords and the articulation of all that. all the other guitar players are fantastic players, wonderful players. You know, yeah. Come on in, you want to do some solos, you want to have some fun, that's great, but let me get the foundation rock solid for you, you know. And again, going back to like, okay, can you play Jingle Bells but do it weird? Like, I got you, you know.
Perfect.
What would Joe Pass do here? I got it.
Oh, wow. I wish I could speak to Joe Pass and be able to tell him kind of thing. Oh, my gosh.
He's still a great teacher. I mean, I just go down the rabbit hole once, twice a year, and I kind of research, you know. I don't even need to hear him explain what he's doing. I just need to listen to what he's doing.
Sure.
And that's enough curriculum to keep me busy for the better part of the year.
Okay, Al, there's a song on Christmas Eve and Other Stories called Ornament, which really mm-hmm. strikes a chord, for lack of a better way of saying it, with you on a personal level every time it's played. How about one from The Lost Christmas Eve, whether it's a lyric reminding you of your sons on other parts of the globe, or even just the powerhouse delivery of some of the vocals?
You know, I'm going to go back to what we talked about earlier with, you know, the sentiment coming from this story. There's some great material on this record, some over-the-top playing, a lot of fun. But there's something really special about the closing piece, which is Child with Different Wings. That, you know, I recorded it, I guess it's 20 years ago now, we're celebrating that anniversary with the record. And I remember writing it with Paul. And Paul and I were both parents. And there's nothing that makes me, you know, as you overheard, you know, my daughter jumping in my car with me at the bus stop.
Yeah.
Nothing gives me more joy and nothing will make me more homicidal than anybody being disrespectful to one of my children, you know. And going back to the fact that it breaks my heart when I see kids making fun of another kid that's different.
Yeah.
Not going to happen on my watch. Yeah, it's not going to happen. It's a pet peeve of mine. I don't like bullies. Being a child is hard enough under the best of circumstances, you know, growing up, going through all those changes, you know, physically, chemically, and all that, you know, the education schools, all that. So when I hear the song Child with Different Wings, it really resonates with me because every one of my kids is different in a little way. Thank God.
Yeah.
You know?
Nice.
How despicable it would be if they all conform to, like, what people consider the norm. Not going to happen. I want them to explore their identity, their creativity, their spirituality, all these things, you know? And I didn't write it. Obviously, my daughter wasn't born at the time. And again, musically, you know, I helped create that song. But Paul had his finger on the pulse of that long before it became an issue. And I think his daughter may have just been born. Maybe she's a toddler at that point. And I don't know if it was directed towards anybody in particular. But I knew it was directed towards all children. And Paul was very protective of kids. And he loved kids. And it break his heart, too, to see anybody ridiculed or made fun of. You know, it could be a birthmark. It could be some sort of, let's just keep it under the guise of someone different.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Not going to happen. And I find it despicable. And I think that song, I'm not going to call it an anthem because it's not, but it certainly lyrically has the potential to do so, to remind people, like, look past that and see what's really hidden inside. And then let me know.
I couldn't rap any better if I had written something out. That is a beautiful way to close.
Listen, my best to you and your family. Much respect for you, sir. I love talking to you.
You too, Al. And again, just another quick thank you for the extended interview late last year with my episode 500. That was well received and a treat. And so another thanks on that one as well.
Listen, you're welcome. And I'm very glad. And just the depth of musicality that Paul would pull out of me. You know, you and I get to talk about things I don't have the opportunity to talk about that often. And I really, really enjoy that.
That means a lot as well. So, all right. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
You're welcome so much. And thank you, my friend. I'll see you soon.
I'll see you in Anaheim.
Can't wait.
For this edition of KVC Arts, it's been music from Trans-Siberian Orchestra in conversation with guitarist and music director Al Petrelli. They're touring The Lost Christmas Eve. Their regional appearance lands in Anaheim at the Honda Center. More at trans-siberian.com. Now, one more thing before we go. In 1974, Bachman Turner Overdrive gave us You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet, and over the years, the story behind its unique lyrical style has influenced and inspired many people who stutter. Here's KVCR's Shireen Awad.
You might know many songs that feature stuttering. My Sharona, Benny and the Jets, Foolin' by Def Leppard, David Bowie's Changes, and many more. But Bachman Turner Overdrive's You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet is based on someone who actually stuttered, Randy Bachman's brother, Gary. In fact, Randy recorded the song with stuttering lyrics with the idea that his brother would be the only person ever to hear it. Randy Bachman said about the recording, "He stuttered. We thought, just for fun, we'd take this song and I'd stutter and we'd send it to him. He'll have the only copy in the world of this song by BTO." But the song never stayed in the proverbial basement. Mercury Records asked the band if they had a leftover song for the album Not Fragile, as it lacked a potential hit song. Randy told the label, "Well, we have this one song, but it's a joke." He said he'd include it if he could re-record the vocals, but the record company didn't like the new version. In fact, they insisted that the stuttering version be released. You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet became the band's only chart topper. Gary Bachman said he never even knew the song was about him until he read his brother's autobiography decades later. He eventually found fluency through speech therapy. In an interview with the Toronto Sun, Jane Fraser, president of the Stuttering Foundation, a nonprofit organization helping those who stutter, stated that people who stutter often frown on songs that feature stuttering, thinking it's done in jest. But this song was actually about a real person. That changed people's attitudes towards it. However, it took 37 years for the real story behind the song to come out in a Winnipeg newspaper article. And when it did, the Stuttering Foundation says they were swamped by emails and calls from Canadian people who stutter, saying they were inspired by the story behind the BTO song and Gary Bachman's journey. They called in to the foundation looking to pursue speech therapy after reading the article. One person even said that they changed the station every time the song came on because it was too painful, until he learned the true story behind it. Then it became his favorite song. Bachman Turner Overdrive's You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100 Singles chart 50 years ago this month. And Randy Bachman is still touring around the world with his band, stuttering his way through the melody that struck a chord with the masses. For KBC Arts, I'm Shireen Awad.
And with that, we wrap up another edition of KBC Arts. Thanks again to Al Petrelli with Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Here at KBCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Zach Mays, and most certainly Shireen Awad. And David Fleming, thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.